Today's program was brought to you by VisitNapaValley.com, the official page for travel to the Napa Valley, America's legendary wine, food, arts, and wellness capital. For more information, visit www.visitnapavalley.com.
Hey, 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 I'm Jimmy Carboni from Beer Sessions Radio. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Hey, and welcome to the Food Scene on HeritageRadioNetwork.org. I'm your host, Michael Harlan Turkel, here today with Galen Zamara of Moss Farmhouse and Almanac Restaurants in New York City. The reason you are here today is because I was walking by, it's 7th Ave, correct?
Yes.
And saw these gorgeous, big, almost bay windows, and the room was illuminated. It was glowing, and there were all these frames on the walls, and that catches my eye sometimes more than that fake food out front of a restaurant, what the interior of a restaurant looks like to the spectator. We got to meet. I came in the restaurant. You toured me through it, upstairs, downstairs, and replete, mixed in so well with the architecture, were these works of art, these pieces which you have collected and which have been donated to you, which are just on display in such a wonderful way that I haven't even seen galleries, you know, hold art in the same light. And there was this one piece of Hershey bar wrappers. And I want to go back to when you were a 24-year-old chef de cuisine at Boulay Bakery and talk about your life then.
Talk about my life then. Well, it's a long time ago, but let's think. For me at the time, that was really exciting. I was obviously I had a great position at Boulay at the time, one of the top restaurants in the city. For me, it seemed like I was making a lot of money. In retrospect, I was severely underpaid. But it was okay. It was very exciting to me. And, well, you know, that piece was something I bought very spontaneously. I spent every single penny I had on it. And I literally just walked into a gallery one day. I saw it, and I just said, I have to have it, and I bought it. It was just like that. And it's been at my house. I've had it. It's been on the walls at Moss for a while, but it never really fit there. And so I took it back home and I've had it there. And then with Almanac, we knew we wanted to have, a lot of art. And, you know, we talked about different things and what we would have on there and if there would be a theme and whatnot. There was a lot of people collaborating with it. And I said, I'm going to bring them here and we'll just put things up on the wall and see what goes where. And it really worked. So it found a home.
Yeah, I mean, it's a wonderful piece, and Al Hansen kind of resembles Matisse cutouts.
Yes.
You know, and those wrappers themselves, they're a word collage, an opera, I think, as you told me.
Well, he has two types. The word opera is less, he doesn't cut out the pieces into shapes, so it's just more of like a grid or something, and there's just words going across it. So he uses the words in this case the Hershey bar wrappers to write things, whether it's a message or just, you know, hey or whatever. And then the other type, it takes the form of a woman, and he calls those Venuses. So this one's a Venus, and he's done them famously with in this case Hershey bar wrappers, with cigarette butts, with matchsticks. And, you know, you're right to compare it to Matisse, because it was interesting at the MoMA's recent exhibit there. I had never really put that connection together, but when I went there, very, very honestly, I would say at best he was inspired. If not, he just blatantly ripped off some of his stuff, because there, he has the blue nudes that Matisse does. He does the exact same sort of forms. Matisse had some what I would call word opera, so it was very, very similar to that. It was interesting to see.
Yeah, but Matisse didn't have Mars Company behind him and, you know, wrappers of candy bars strewn around the studio. Yeah. Also on the wall, Lee Krasner, who she was one of the most influential kind of abstract impressionists of her time. Just such a wonderful painter. What piece do you have at the restaurant?
Well, I mean, it's part of a collection, and you know, we worked with a curator who a lot of the art. You know, her name is Ashley Gale Harris. She's responsible for getting for us, and literally, you know. It was exciting for me because in the beginning parts of the project, we talked about having this opportunity to have some very young and up-and-coming artists who, you know, maybe can't find gallery space. And so their work is never seen. Maybe they're a little bit known, they have a little bit of a name for them, but their stuff is literally just sitting on the floor in a studio or something like that. And this would be a good opportunity for them to get some you know, wall space. But then she has a couple pieces like this Lee Krasner in there that blew my mind that we'd be able to get, which is just amazing. So it's, I mean, we're very fortunate. We got very lucky, I think.
Well, I mean, you have old masters, not, you know, old masters, but new age masters. You have Sam Moyer, who has a large piece on the wall made of rug.
I think it's a rug from IKEA that he somehow, it's like encrusted. It's taken on this crazy form. It's great.
Yeah. You know, and I talk about the art first, not that that dictates how you cook or how the restaurant is run, but it really does influence your food and your thought about an ingredient itself. How is that?
Well, you know, the experience that you get when you're eating in the restaurant, you know, from the chef's standpoint, I think that we want to just say this is all about food and that it's all about the chef and it's all about, but it's just not the case, you know. So we know that your whole experience, dining experience, is going to come from everything, including what the room looks like and how it feels. And you want to create this sort of fun, exciting feeling so that even before food gets to the people are excited. There's like this sort of anticipation and feeling that there's something fun going on. So art really accomplishes that. But it's you know, it's something you can contemplate too, and hopefully people are contemplating the food. You know, some meals, you know, are just for nourishment or fun or whatever, but hopefully, you know, at Almanac, you're going to think about the food, you're going to contemplate it, and art, I think, sets that tone too.
I mean, you even kind of like force that fact with a couple of the pieces on the wall, which are these botanicals or these studies on a singular object, from squashes to fish.
Yeah.
Who did those pieces?
So our project architect, Ben Albury, kind of midway through the project, it was kind of like, oh yeah, by the way, I'm an artist. You know, I like to draw things. And we're kind of like, oh, okay, you know, that's really great, Ben. And he's like, no, you know, I think I have this idea for your bathroom walls and maybe some botanical prints. At the time, we were considering, you know, in sort of this theme of the Almanac, let's get some botanical prints. But you know, the problem is that I think that is over. You know, there's 100 restaurants in the West Village alone that have botanical prints on their walls. You could go to some, you know, one of those little stores on the street that sells those prints, and you can buy a million of them.
You could just rip off the back cover of Cook's Illustrated.
Exactly. And so we didn't want that because it's just generic and it's, you know, it doesn't give the same sort of sense. And so we were talking about different options that we could do. And Ben, you know, said, I'll draw some things, you know, and let's make them relevant. And me and him, we met and we worked together. We talked about things and we kind of came up with this idea of, let's have some things that are, you know, in the moment, in season right now. So we opened in November, so he has, you know, a Heritage Breed turkey that he drew.
Oh, we know those well here at Heritage.
Yeah. So, you know, it was perfect because not only did we have this kind of seasonal display of vegetables or fruits or whatever, of things that literally you'll find on the menu then. But he also, what I really liked and what took it together is how, as a chef, what I'm doing is I'm taking that squash and I'm really thinking about all the culinary uses of it and how it grows and what's special about it. You know, are we using the seeds? Are we using the flowers? Are we using the whole squash, the skin? What am I doing with it as a cook? You know, Ben also decided to draw. So he has the flower and he has the squash and he has the seeds and he's talking about it, and that's all in the botanical drawing. So it really came together to express the feeling of the restaurant and the feeling of the food. And then, you know, hopefully we can get some more for springtime and we can swap them out, so to speak.
But that's what I love, a lot of botanical drawings or charts were of the different kinds. You know, everyone talks about the different kinds of heirloom tomatoes when they come to market, from Brandywines to, you know, Green Zebras. But these are exploding diagrams of, you know, like you said, skin, flesh, pulp, pit, seed, you know, all the parts that you as a chef have to contemplate. Not just creatively, but also cost efficiency.
Right. And he, you know, I think the architect in him, you know, really came through in that, where it's like, you know, he has a whole fish and the bone structure of the fish, and let me get this right, and there's kind of dimensions put in there, and, you know, again, the nose to tail type of thing of what we can do with all that sort of stuff. It was just really interesting to see it. It was almost kind of like a Da Vinci-like art in a way, you know what I mean, where it's just like not just this pure artistic mind, but then there's this culinary aspect of it, and then there's like this very strict architect, you know, aspect to it. It's interesting.
I think there's sage or salvia on the wall as well.
Mm-hmm.
Have there ever been a part of a plant or an animal that he's drawn that you did not know about and are trying to now incorporate into the menu? Or
no, it was more, hey, you know, what types of foods are you going to be working with in November? Hey, what types of food do you think you're going to have January? This sort of thing. We literally just went through, I just wrote down lists for him. You know, different times a year, and then he kind of picked some things, and you know, he wanted, then asked, you know, hey, can you get me a scallop shell? I want to see what the whole live scallop looks like. You know, get me this. You know, and he would come into the kitchen and kind of hang out with us for a little bit.
But it's not sectioned off in the restaurant where next to the turkey picture you can only have turkey, next to the squash you can only eat squash.
No,
maybe someday.
All right.
It is spring.
Mm-hmm.
Believe it or not. It is spring.
Yeah.
And what ingredients are you hoping to work with this season? And, you know, maybe BC, as I found out Ben is also called as an artist, might put up on the walls.
This is always a sort of a funny time as a chef, because everybody expects, like, you know, the first day of spring that all of a sudden there's going to be all this new stuff out there. But, you know, even in a good year, like obviously it just snowed, but even in a good year, it takes a while for us to really see anything locally. But some of the, what's really fun is the wild stuff. And there's, you know, a ton of wild mushrooms that come forth right now. There's wild greens, a lot of, you know, the onion family, the alliums, nettles, that sort of thing. So that's first what you can get excited about. And then later in spring, you're going to have, you know, rhubarb, and you're going to get rhubarb that in the first part, you know, my pastry chefs hate because it's not pretty pink colored, and they just, it's green and they don't know what to do with it, and then it gets nice and red and they know what to do with it. So, you know, in the beginning of the season, rhubarb's going to be fun because we'll use it in more savory applications, and then it'll show up, and, you know, as it ripens, it gets redder. We just use it in different ways, and, you know, those start to see flowers that you can eat, and baby vegetables and cherries and all that sort of stuff is going to start coming.
So you're pumped, unlike me, who feels like it's always too early. You know, you hit spring and then there are all the ramps, the goddamn ramps that I hate so much. But that's also because I dislike the raw onion taste. But you have a trove of them in, what, South Orange, New Jersey now. I mean, a Santa Cruz boy who had the world to him. I mean, talk about the right climate to grow year-round. when was it in New Jersey that you found that there was actually morels and ramps and this plethora, this bounty?
Yeah, well, we recently moved out to New Jersey, and you know, I've been in New York City for a long time. But like you said, I grew up in Santa Cruz. I grew up in this little. I didn't even grow up in Santa Cruz. I grew up in Bonny Doon, which is just, we don't even have traffic lights. It's just the mountains. So, you know, I was missing a little bit of that sort of nature in my life. So I'm very lucky we have this South Mountain Reservation out behind us. It's basically a big state park. And I spend a lot of time there hiking and fishing and whatnot. And one day I just was out fishing, and I just looked around, and there was just ramps everywhere. Just everywhere. I've seen mushrooms all over the place, and very obviously people forage for mushrooms because you can see where they've harvested them. But I was very surprised to see the ramps. And they were also a lot earlier than I get them from my New York foragers, so that was interesting. And also one day I was just in my backyard. I looked over, and I was like, that's a morel. Like, there are morels growing in my backyard. I had no idea. I never heard of even just local morels. I usually get them for, like, California and Oregon when we get them at the restaurants. And I was a little skeptical. I was a little worried, like, maybe it's a false morel and it would be poisonous. And I'm not the most experienced mushroom hunter, so that's incredibly likely. And so I just picked a couple and ate it and was half expecting to die. And it was very exciting. So...
Well, I'm glad you're here with us today. We're actually going to take a quick break and come back and talk about your imaginative preparations that accentuate the nuances of each growing cycle. You've been listening to The Food Scene on HeritageRadioNetwork.org.
Today's program was brought to you by VisitNapaValley.com. Welcome to the Napa Valley, North America's legendary wine and food capital, where the art of living well is defined, and each season holds a story waiting to be discovered. Life feels slower here, lived at a place where tables are set with care. Fine wine and food are created from the bounty of our own vineyards and gardens, and relationships with friends and family gathered around the table are somehow sweeter. When planning a trip to the Napa Valley, we invite you to visit the destination's official visitor website, visitnapavalley.com, or stop by Napa County's official visitor information center, located in downtown Napa, where our friendly and knowledgeable community ambassadors can assist you in creating your own legendary Napa Valley experiences. The Visitor Information Center is located at 600 Main Street in Napa and is open from 9 a.m. to 5 p.m., 7 days a week, 360 days a year. Your invitation to experience the Napa Valley beckons. Take a deep breath, lose yourself in our quiet green and golden hills, renew your body and spirit, taste our legendary wines and cuisine, and experience the people who make this valley like no other in the world. For more information, go to visitnapavalley.com.
Hey, and welcome back to The Food Scene on HeritageRadioNetwork.org. I'm your host, Michael Harlan Dirkel, here again with Galen Zamara and Almanac Restaurant, your new little darling.
Mm-hmm.
3, 5, and 8-course tasting menus. And these are almost like a study of the season and of specific ingredients, in a way that you not just focus on whatever's, you know, fresh and tastes best, but what parts you can utilize in the same dish. You know, you see something like a mushroom or a steelhead trout. How can you take that, you know, functional thing and flavor and use it all?
Right.
And express it in so many different ways.
Yeah, it's a lot, you know, some of the dishes, you know, are we're looking at something in season and we're focusing on that, and that's straightforward. But some of them are a little more. So, like, you brought up the mushroom soup, which I'm just not ballsy enough to put on the menu fungus. But that's what I wanted to do, because I wanted it to be about fungus, because it isn't just about mushrooms. It's about a lot of different types of fungus that we eat. I mean, mushrooms is an obvious one, and truffles are, you know, they're not mushrooms, but they're similar. We use wheat locoche, which is, you know, a corn that has been has this fungus growing on it. It swells up and turns black and
you
looks.
You can say it. You can hideous. Say corn smut on
corn
there.
Smut.
Yeah,
it's corn smut. We use there's a Roquefort foam in it. So again, there's in the process of making cheese, there's soy sauce in it, which has fungus. There's all these different elements to it that are just looking at this whole other kingdom that we eat that's just crazy and mysterious in its own right. So that's an example of that dish that we just want to look at. You mentioned steelhead trout, which, again, going back to Santa Cruz, steelhead's basically a rainbow trout that runs into the ocean. It sort of lives a salmon-like life rather than a trout life, so it's much more like salmon. And steelhead is something that's very near and dear to me because I used to fish for it growing up in Santa Cruz, and in these days, including the river that I fished on, they're all dammed up, and steelhead, I don't know, maybe there's a handful of rivers in the world that are left that they can live in. So they're very rare. And it's such a stupendous fish. I love it. And I can get them, straight from Washington. We just get them FedEx to us. And, you want to just look at everything that is in the fish. Obviously, there's the flesh, there's skin, there's roe. So we just try and really look at, what goes on with it. And where it lives, what's its cycle. So, again, like with trout, when it's in the river system, you find things, like I mentioned, ramps. You find things like watercress. You find things like nettles. So I like to pair those naturally with the fish because that's just something that lives with it. It's natural.
What is that saying? If it grows together, it goes together?
Yes, but there's a lot of truth in that. There's a lot of truth.
And the acorn, because you actually, I wouldn't call this reverse engineering, but talk about a complete cycle. You look at something as singular as an acorn and then lead that into Flying Pig Farms acorn-fed pigs.
Right. And this was a dish that didn't get to work this year because I didn't get a lot of acorns dropping this year. It's one of the things I like to do in the fall is I take my kids out with buckets and we just pick up acorns. And then I just bring them in and, Mike from Flying Pigs Farm, he brings me a pig and I give him yard bags of acorns. And he just takes them back and just gives them to his pigs. Otherwise I'm just composting them and stuff. And so this feels like, Well, anyways, my wife wouldn't let me have a pig, so that's the long story. Well, anyways, the idea is, the oak tree. Let's look at the oak tree. And obviously, you don't eat oak trees, and really, even just acorns themselves are hard to eat. So, the idea of the dish, which hopefully will happen this winter, is we'll make a ravioli with acorn flour. And we'll get some of the pig meat that has been eating these acorns. And we'll also get truffles, as truffles grow on oak trees. So you see, there's kind of this, it's not really a symbiotic, it's almost a symbiotic approach to forming this menu, this food, of looking at this whole plant and the food that comes from it.
See, from the name Almanac and even your logo of the Moon Phases, I thought, you were going to be a biodynamic restaurant, maybe even having those wines. But there's something similar in the biodynamic approach where, you're really going by this feeling, this sense of the earth, this understanding of the soil, and you have to react to it. So it's almost this reactionary cuisine. It's this way of interpreting only by certain stimuli coming into the restaurant.
Right. Well, it's, I want people to get away from this relationship to food where everything is exactly the same and available all the time. The supermarket food, where it's a tomato is perfectly round and it's red and you can get it anytime you want. And get into really the natural law that exists with food and just kind of embrace it. Because as a chef, it's incredibly difficult. Because first of all, nothing is the same. It doesn't look the same, it doesn't cook the same, it doesn't cost the same, it's not ready at the same time every year. It's just different, different, different all the time. And when you're trying to make your food consistent in a restaurant, that creates problems because then you can't just have a recipe and hand it to someone because on this day it's going to be different than that day. And the next day you won't have any of those things because it wasn't available. And so that's what Almanac is about, and that's again where we really want to just look at the naturalness of food and kind of like as a chef be challenged by it.
It's funny you mentioned, you know, nature but chaos at the same time, and I feel like a couple artists kind of define that. You know, you have Lieb Krasner there, who's in the same school of maybe Pollock and Kandinsky, where, you know, there's no way you can remake a Pollock or a Kandinsky.
Right.
And then there's Sarah Reynolds, mm-hmm. Sarah H. Reynolds, which you have on the wall, these charcoal drawings, which in a sense are made of nature. But again, it's something that's unreplicable. You know, these are singular pieces of art.
Right. And they, I guess that's what makes sense, you know, and they have a sort of a, there's organization to them and there's planning to them, you know, which I don't think people can understand. But, like you said, it's a unique one-time thing. And in a way, that's how the menus are because, you know, there's dishes last year that I'm just not going to do again. And I don't have a recipe for it. And I have a bad memory, so I don't remember what I did, so I have to do something else.
Luckily, this is recorded. You can listen to it again. There's another piece of art, I believe, what, on the loge or mezzanine.
The mezzanine.
Mm-hmm. I can't believe I just said loge. I've been to too many sporting events in my life. Donald Robertson, who I think is euphemistically known as
Drawbertson.
Drawbertson.
Yeah.
Who just came onto the art scene like a supernova, like a mega force, but was using these materials that are very common in everyday, from masking and duct tape of different colors. It almost reminded me of kitchens when I first saw it, all the different color tapes and Sharpies. And
yeah.
So it's fun to see that in that element, but what does that piece mean to you?
That piece, it's great. Donald's just such a nice guy, and his story is just amazing. You know, he comes from kind of the cosmetics, I guess not really fashion, but he draws like a you know, like fashion art, you know, those sketches that people draw. But he, you know, for our 10th anniversary at Moss Farmhouse, it just as a gift, he just drew, you know, this, I don't know what to call it, because it's not a painting, but this piece, and it's on a cardboard box, and it's duct tape and Sharpie, and it's the outside of the restaurant. It's a bunch of people walking by, and among the people are me in my chef coat and my wife with a gift, and my kids. You know, my son's on a skateboard, my daughter's got a balloon, and it's cute, and it's just really personable, and it's very meaningful that he would do something like that. He's just, it's very whimsical. And I do happen to have it at Almanac because we just, again, it looked better there. It worked better. Cause like you said, it has a lot of bright colors in it. And Moss has a lot. Moss is kind of, you know, beige and green. And all of a sudden when you saw these pinks and purples, it didn't fit right. So we found, you know, like you said, there's a home for it there.
Yeah, and hopefully with this spring, we see a lot more bright colors on the plate as well.
Yes, of course.
Now I have a question for you about, you know, aperitif or happy hour, and a lot of restaurants have that time where they have little snacks and drinks. Have you ever considered having, like, gallery or showing hours and having people, you know, grab a drink at the bar and being able to wander through the restaurant before you open?
I haven't really thought about that, but we did think about having some, especially, pre-opening sort of parties about that. Maybe someday we will. You know, what galleries should do is galleries should have restaurants, at least just a kitchen, because if you've ever been to an art gallery when they're having a showing, they want to have wine and hors d'oeuvres, but they just don't have the space and equipment for it, and it's awful. And I think it would be very, very fun to have a restaurant like that in an art gallery where you could do that sort of thing.
Well, hopefully one day they just merge and the symbiosis is there.
Yeah.
Well, if you've never been to Almanac, please stop in, not only for the art, but the wonderful food. And thank you so much, Galen, for being on the show. You've been listening to The Food Scene on HeritageRadioNetwork.org. I'm your host, Michael Harlan Turkel. Hoping to have you back here next Tuesday at 3. Cheers.
Listening to this program on HeritageRadioNetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes Store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us with questions anytime at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a 501c3 nonprofit. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.